Thanks so much. You know, I thought I would start by reading a poem. No, I wouldn't do that. we were kidding about that earlier. I was like, you know, what if I just got up there and started reading Ross's poems? You know, it's really a pleasure to introduce Ross. Ross and I have been friends for quite a while. We met at Cave Canem, you know, the wonderful writer's retreat for African-American poets in, I guess, 2003. And, you know, because it's Cave Canem, and because, you know, there's a lot of sort of competition both poetically and athletically, I guess it maybe be a gentle way of saying it, we all decided to go play basketball. And this, I should say that this is in the middle of the summer, in the middle of the day, in right outside Pittsburgh, where it's very muggy and hot. And so Ross and Terrence Hayes and Kyle Dargan and a few other wonderful writers and I all went out to play basketball. You know, I hadn't touched a ball in about 5 years when I went to do that. And I was just saying. But you know, and one of the things I realized at that moment is that you never stop loving the game as a basketball player, but the game stops loving you, you know? And that was one of those moments where all of this converged. So the last thing I remember about this game was trying to get a rebound and Ross's elbow going into the back of my head, you know, right when I tried to do this. You know, it's not that Ross was being, you know, aggressive or anything. It's just that when he stands up, you'll see his elbow and my head are like the same height, you know. And so when he did this, he just bang. You know, the weird thing about this is that I got the same sensation from reading Ross's poems and his wonderful book Against which before I forget, I should say Ross did the cover of this as well. He's a multi-talented artist. Whether the poems are lyric or narrative, they have moments of insight like rattling of logic's cage, which I thought is a really great line from the poem called poem beginning with a line overheard in the gym, no less. These poems give the reader a fluency to understand what we might not have seen before, whether it be the connections between barbecue and human torture, or the marriage of honeybees and the gold swell limiting the morning clouds. The inefficiency of crossbows as agents of suicide was something that I thought was particularly great. I hope you read that poem if you get the chance. You know, it's that lucidity that I'm talking about in this sort of camaraderie in Ross's poems that we'll get to hear tonight. Ross is, in case you don't know, is an assistant professor of English at Indiana University. So if you're brave enough to either want to challenge him poetically, however that might be, or in basketball, you can find Ross in Bloomington. Again, this is his poem, his book of poems, Against Which. It's your first collection, right? And I'm sure it's the beginning of many more. Please welcome Ross Gay. Good evening.
That's a gauge of an audience, and you corrected yourself quickly. So I'm going to read a few poems. Actually, thanks for introducing me. That was really nice. That elbow thing was really good. I'm going to read a poem real quick about football. I played football in college, and you know, because football and poetry really go together in everyone's minds. I'm going to read this poem about football. It's kind of about football. So this is in quotation marks. This is what one of our coaches told us we ought to do. it's really strange now. Bear with me. Rape him like you would his mother. You might call this post-nuclear motivational technique for big boys in rut and helmets. Besides, it was for us a big game. And the goon at whom said threat was lobbed had blown us off in the newspaper. Should be a good warm-up for the playoffs. What else could coach have said? Tear him limb from limb? Beat the pants off of him? Kill him? Listen. Nothing flicks a young buck's dick like saying there's no there there. Any coach worth his salt knows that. And so, poured into our pants like ballerinas, but fatter, we attacked like we would his mother and lost 35-7. A weird thing to say that Coach said. Here's another sort of beautiful and weird thing to say that begins this poem that Adrian was mentioning. It's called poem beginning with a line overheard in the gym, and this poem actually comes out of the gym where said elbow was thrown into said head. But not amongst us, I'll have you know. We are not implicated in this. It's called poem beginning with a line overheard in the gym. And listen to it closely, because it's very iambic. It's lovely. I drive 1,000 miles to suck the dick of the man who fucked her once. If you're like me, the pristine lilt of iambic verse will halt your dumb work on the bench press. You also love the hyperbolic rattling of logic's cage. Mostly you love the way the loins fuel the tongue's conjure. But what grand sadness dragged and misplaced desire, as though from another's memory of smoke we might glean some end of ache. Truth be told, ache's shop is long set up, as birth's phantom limb. Let's instead admire the tether, its blue flame. It's wrangle with the loamy earth for the body, the keepsake. Have you ever said that kind of thing? Yes. Yes, you have. This is a biblical poem. It's also a poem about menstruation. It's called Unclean Make Me. And there's an epigraph from Leviticus. And the epigraph goes, and if a woman has an issue, and her issue in her flesh be blood, she shall be put apart 7 days. And if any man lie with her at all, and her flowers be upon him, he shall be unclean 7 days. When the body blooms, you must put your face to it. Lay tongue to the lathe, the blessed lather. Song like marble spun into silk, the human loom, the thread limning your lips. Breathe there. Fill your lungs with birth's florid shadow. This is the common dream of the living and dead, to not only meet the maker, but to taste its sweet. Even God should know this. Okay, this is called within 2 weeks, the African-American poet Ross Gay is mistaken for both the African-American poet Terrence Hayes and the African-American poet Kyle Dargan, none of whom looks anything like the other. You can add to that. The African-American president, Barack Obama. If you think you know enough to say this poem is about good hair, I'll correct you and tell you it's about history, which is the blacksmith of your tongue, your eyes. When you see misunderstanding, I see knuckles and teeth for sale in a storefront in a quiet hamlet in Dixie. I see the waterlogged face of a 14-year-old boy, the bullet's imperceptible sizzle toward an unarmed man. And as you ask me to sign the book that is not mine, your gaze shifting between me and the author's photo, whispering, "But that's not you," I do not feel sorry for you. No, I think only that when a man is a concept, he will tell you about the smell of smoke. He will tell you the distance between heartbreak and rage. Okay, here's a couple love poems of sorts. Thank you. This is called Love, You Got Me Good. Love, you got me good. Honey bunny, for you, I've got a mouthful of soot. Sweet pea, for you, I always smell like blood. Everything that touches me, love muffin, turns to salt. When I think of you, I see fire. When I dream of you, I hear footsteps on bones. When I see you, I can feel the scythe smooth handle in my palm. Love, you got me standing at attention. Got me clutching my heart, polishing guns, planting a victory garden. Love, I got a piggy bank painted like a flag. I got a flag in the shape of a piggy bank. For you, Sugarfoot, I've been dancing the waterboard. For you, love, for you. You're that kind of love, love. A bulldozer groove, mouth pretty as a grave. And this is called Love, I'm Done With You. Ever wake up with your footy PJs cinching your neck like a noose? Ever toss your guts in a toilet after a home-cooked meal? Or notice how the blood on the bottoms of your feet that used to be cute isn't so much anymore and just won't seem to go away? Love, it used to be you could stop brushing your teeth for like 2 or 3 days and still I'd push my downy face into your neck. Used to be I hung on your every word. But now I can tell you your breath stinks and you're full of shit. You have more lies about yourself, rags to riches, bootstraps, destiny, etc., than bodies beneath your bed. Like you're rooting for the underdog, team player, all that. Love, you helped design the brick that built the walls around the castle, in the basement of which is a vault, inside of which is another vault, inside of which, you get my point. Your tongue is made of honey, but flicks like a snake's. You sing like a bird, but everyone's ears are bleeding. From the inside, your house shines and shines, but from outside, you can see it's built from bones. From out here, it looks like a graveyard, and the garden's all ash. And besides, your breath stinks. We're through. How's everyone doing? Oh, look at this. This is a funny poem. I read this in the New York Times, in which everything is true. There's this orchid that does sort of what I say in the poem. I like what the orchid does so much that I'm kind of compelled to tell you, but I'll let the poem tell you. Ode to the tongue orchid, who over the millennia has come to conjure the lady wasp's sweet so absolute that once inside, the male wasp, this orchid's pollinator, becomes its lover, shall we say. The scientists say the orchids need the males to lighten their loads, which in turn, who knew, makes them make more males. You knew this. Which makes them make more orchids. But who cares why the orchid does it, or the wasp for that matter? The earth has a taste so good you could mess your pants for it. Now have a nice day. Man tries to commit suicide with a crossbow. So this is a poem that actually comes out of my best friend was an emergency room doctor. So he would come home, and we lived together for years, and he would come home and tell these stories about what he had seen or this and that. And this is true. Man tries to commit suicide with a crossbow and fails. First, imagine the weapon pointing heavenward beneath his chin. After the trigger's quick tick, the following. What for said undead must have sounded like a rocket's stratospheric crash, which is to say the arrow just crested the crown, i.e., it got stuck. At which point, the head, now a kebab, said undead had the wherewithal to unscrew the skewer from the little lodged missile and pull it out, to walk to the emergency room. I love to think grace takes strange shapes. the arrow balm to the howl of neurons, to think of that walk beneath the velvet night. Stay with me. Don't think headache. Think instead the star's ancient light warming his just budding horn. I think I'll read two more poems. Is that about right with time? Yeah, okay. This is called A Song of the Pig Who Gave the Poet Age 3 Worms. It's from the perspective of a pig. You did not know what the hands that held your hands would do to me, my mother, and siblings. You couldn't imagine it. And so, instead of escaping your clutch and snuggle, I waited, threw my tiny hooves in the air, and gave you my belly. The other hogs watched. Although I dreamt of opening your throat with the same blade stained with the blood of my kin, your touch felt good, honest, kissing my snout and eyes, my pig's mouth. And when you left, walking backward, weren't you? I knew I had marked you, your little mouth, mouth that kissed me, whispered in my ears, that spoke to no one about the mud and shit caked in my hooves, that screamed with joy at the sight of pigs, that loved the taste of bacon and ham and pork chops most of all. For the lies and smiles and for your dull memory, do you recall the color of my eyes? The speckles of pink crawling across my snout, the smell of the smooth ridge of my spine. For this especially, I tried to mark you with the pain of worms, which, like everything else, failed. Hands, snout, windblown sand of our bones. Okay. So this is a poem called Two Bikers Embrace on Broad Street, and I'm going to close with this. Two Bikers Embrace on Broad Street. Broad Street's a street in Philadelphia, the Broad Street I'm talking about. Though you may have your own Broad Street, and you could imagine that this happens there too. Maybe. Since you're something like me, you too would have nearly driven into oncoming traffic for gawking at the clutch between the two men on Broad Street in front of the hospital, which would not stop, each man's face so deeply buried in the other's neck. These men not my guests to be fucked with. Squeezing through that first porous layer of the body into the heat beneath. Maybe you too would have nearly driven over three pedestrians as your head swiveled to lock on their lock, their burly fingers squeezing the air from the angels on the backs of their denim jackets, which reminds you the million and one secrets exchanged in nearly the last class between your father and his brother, during which the hospital's chatter and rattle somehow fell silent in deference to the untranslatable song between them. And just as that clasp endured through what felt like the gradual lengthening of shadows and the emergence of once cocooned things and continues to this day, so too did I float unaware of the 3,000-pound machine in my hands drifting through a stoplight while I gawked at their ceaseless cleave going deeper and deeper still. So that Broad Street from Fairmount to the Parkway reeked of the honey-scented wind pushed from the hummingbirds now hovering above these two men, sweetening somehow the air until nectar. Yes, nectar gathered at the corners of my mouth like sun-colored spittle, the steel vehicle now a lost memory as I joined the fire-breasted birds in listening to air exchanged between these two men who are themselves listening. Forever to the muscled contours of the other's neck, all of us still and listening, as if we had nothing to blow up, as if we had nothing to kill. Thank you very much. Thanks, Rachel, for having me here.